Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio. This is Garth, and today I'll be talking with Casey McFarland, a senior tracker in the cyber tracker process, also the co-author of Bird Feathers, a North American guide. Our topic today is about being stuck in tracking, getting through the humps of tracking, those low times when it's hard to get out in the field. We're excited to talk with Casey again today. Also, bear in mind that we had a little bit of technical difficulties with my microphone during the recording, so I apologize if I sound weird on any of this, but bear with us, and it's a good talk.
Well, thanks for coming on the show again, Casey. It's great to talk to you again and hear your adventures around the world tracking.
Yeah, Garth, thanks for having me back. I love doing this.
So today's topic, we're talking about being stuck in tracking. And when I think of being stuck, I think of it maybe on a couple of levels. There's like, you know, just trying to figure out the individual track that you're trying to figure out and being stuck on that. And then there's being stuck, you know, just as motivation, you know, on a larger scheme of keeping tracking over the long term.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I think it's a fun topic to breach, because it seems like in anything that we're interested in the world, we can get kind of lost when, especially when we're looking at other people that we see as being good at something, and sometimes it can seem like others that are practicing are constantly inspired and constantly motivated and just like these nonstop passion machines. And I just think it's important for us to remember that we're going to slip and we're going to stumble and we're going to have moments where we just forget that we care about wildlife tracking, say, when we just get run down, and to recognize that that's going to happen to us and that's a normal part of the process. And we just need to embrace it as a natural rhythm of practice and move through it.
Yeah, I notice in myself, actually the last couple of months, I have not been out tracking very much. So I'm in one of those down bottom pits now, or I need to climb my way back up out of it.
Interesting. See, that's so cool. That's exactly my point, because I look at someone like yourself, and you're constantly putting things up that you're seeing. It's clear you're in the field. And I think it's easy to get the perception that you're just like a tracking machine all the time. You know, yeah. What I mean? So it's kind of fun to see, like, yeah, actually, dude, I'm just kind of struggling right now. So that's interesting. So how does it affect you? Do you just kind of you just don't feel the same inspiration to get out, kind of a deal?
Yeah, I guess sometimes, you know, I definitely have a lot of pictures. So, you know, I'm still posting stuff. I'm still thinking about stuff, but it's, you know, it's kind of the in the field part is on a low, but I'm still engaged in it in other ways, I guess. But,
gotcha.
But actually out in the field stuff, you know, it's just been raining a lot, and I, you know, normally yep. I still go out and get wet and stuff, but yeah, sometimes it just feels like life also gets busier at certain times and less at certain times, and right now I'm in one of those busier times. Maybe that's with the holidays and stuff too, but
yeah, and sometimes it's hard to get back on track after we get knocked out. And I think that's really important for us too, for all of us that want to continue this whole journey of wildlife tracking. It is a lifelong journey, and life is going to get in the way. You know, we're crummy things happen, or good busy times happen, and that whole that whole notion of that sort of shiny, cool, exhilarating wildlife tracking experience can fade into the background. And we just have to go get it again somehow. But it's funny you mentioned that about the rain, because I remember standing around in Washington, I just have all these clear memories of literally just standing there with like my hands in my pockets, and it's just pissing down rain, and I'm wet and feeling fairly miserable and just feeling like I hated tracking and not knowing why I was out again. And I think that it's important for us to kind of just, that's what's so interesting about these types of things, is that even when we're really not feeling it, there's always going to be this small string there that's sort of dangling that we just need to grab onto and be like, all right, I'm going to go out again. And then once we're out and stumbling around, there's usually that one little thing where you're like, God, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks. It's like the metaphorical, like it's all like rained out raccoon tracks kind of a deal. And then, but then all of a sudden there's that one little thing where you're like, huh, what's that? And it pulls us into the moment. And even if it was just that little tiny thing, all of a sudden we're like, oh, okay, you can grab onto it. And you feel an entire shift, even if it's just momentary. And if you can go home from there, but it's kind of cool. And those little tiny moments will carry us. And the next time we want to go out, that will be a little boost for us to get up off the couch, you know?
Yeah, I think that kind of ties in with all those, the different arts of tracking, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And you kind of bounce around. I find myself bouncing around. Like sometimes I'll really be into trailing, and sometimes I'll really be into just trying to, you know, interpret what's going on. And I think that maybe those questions can be like an arsenal bag of, you know, if you feel burnt out in one, just pick up a different one and
exactly.
Try it out.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. And it is good. And that is kind of one of the catch-22s about all this, is the more we know, the easier it is to find that little hook, you know, to get the hook in the mouth when we're out. And so it is important for us to try to be pushing that arsenal of questions that we have. And that's actually, you know, I haven't really thought about, I remember that whole deal, the six arts of tracking. I haven't quite thought about it in that many words or in those terms for quite a while, but it's so true. There's always something. And of course, one of the reasons I think we like wildlife tracking is because it is so spontaneous. It's hard to plan. It's hard to plan, like, okay, I want to get better at gray foxes today. And you're like, well, good luck, you know, because either the world will present gray foxes or not, but it will present something. And so it's kind of a fun thing. And what is cool is that the better we get and the more questions we have and the more experience the foundation on which we're walking upon in the world, all of a sudden we can start, well, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, but we begin growing into this role where we can be like, actually, I want to go find gray foxes today. And you'd know where to go find gray foxes, and you can find them, which is super cool. And when I say them, I mean their sign, not necessarily the animal itself. But and that is a cool thing. And that is one of the, you know, if we talk about later here, if we talk about practices to incorporate it, you know, we can get in the habit as wildlife trackers of always going down to practice under that underpass, you know, those honey holes, as I like to call them, where you're like, all right, where you have those places where you know you're going to go easily and you know you're going to learn something. But it can become somewhat routine, and it is really good for us to be like, I'm going to go learn about elk today and just go beat around in the woods where you know there's elk until you find an elk sign and really soak it up. And in that way, tracking becomes much more of a hunt and in a more literal sense. And that is so good for us. And it pushes us and it trains us in a different way. So that can be a really good addition. And like you said, we could just call that trailing. But it is good to go out in search of specific things sometimes.
Yeah, I definitely have my, what'd you call it, a honey pole?
Yeah, the honey hole.
Yeah, honey hole. Yeah, I definitely have you know, my spots where I definitely get into routines there. So
yeah,
which can also become kind of a rut, probably, of like you say, being able to practice all this other stuff, like all this rain and stuff is actually, you know, I could have just been practicing a bunch of aging stuff right outside my front door or mm-hmm. something. Then yeah.
So, totally. And oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what kind of things could we throw into this toolkit? You know, so we got our different questions, goals. It sounds like having goals is what you're talking about with going out and, you know, like trailing elk. I'm going to have the goal of trailing elk or finding gray fox, or what are some other tools we can throw in that bag?
Great. That's a good question. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I remember a million years ago when I worked at Wilderness Awareness School, and we would, in the Anake program, what's now called the Anake program, back then it was the residential program, but I would be working with students, and there's, of course, all this initial inspiration around wildlife tracking, and I've never been a real, at least in things like wildlife tracking, a real goal-oriented person, and I think that, and some people might be excellent at this, and I just kind of suck at it, you know, I don't know, but I've always found it hard to be particularly goal-oriented about learning wildlife tracking. You could certainly be like, I'm going to go out and fill my notebook with 10 different species of things, and that becomes much more tangible and easy to do, but I would start hearing folks wanting to create concrete goals about wildlife tracking. And like I say, I'm sure that some folks can do this, but what I saw sort of as a theme or a pattern was that people would begin to, first off, they would bite off way more than they could chew. They'd be like, I want to track 5 times a week for 2 hours. And you're like, dang. Okay. Yeah. And inevitably it never worked out. And in part it's because it can be hard to stick to our sort of overachieving mental preparations, but it can also, like we addressed earlier, it can be difficult to actually fill blocks of time or whatever, depending on what we're finding in the field, depending on that spontaneity of what the world is offering, what wildlife are doing. And so I think setting goals is, for me anyway, I think it's been best just to be like, I know I'm just going to get out. I'm just going to go, I'm going to make myself get out. Because in the end, that's all it really comes down to, is whether we're out in the field and we're giving ourselves the opportunity to learn something or not. And it's, if we get out, we're guaranteed to come back better. That's just how it works. And so... You know, I think just for goals, that can be a pretty simple one to be like, all right, I am going to get out this weekend. I'm going to set aside Saturday and I'm going to go see what happens, and make yourself do it. And then you're going to come back a better wildlife tracker, guaranteed. And then within that getting out, we can really begin to, we can begin to focus on different things. We can begin to, you know, sometimes I encourage people too, just to find those places. I mean, it might be useful for folks to spend a, you know, quote, day out looking for tracks, actually looking for good underpasses in their area, you know?
Yeah.
Just be like, all right, I'm going to drive around. I'm going to spend all day and just hit these 14 underpasses that I've got circled off on the map. And all of a sudden they find a place that's close they can get to that they're going to learn a lot from, or sign places, you know, beating around and being like, that looks cool up there. I'm going to get up in there and search around. And what you're doing in that essence, or, you know, essentially that's setting traps. And I think that finding those hunting holes is a lot like a hunt in itself, where you're like, okay, you can get out, you learn an area, and in that way you're setting a trap so that you can return to it and be, collecting information, collecting knowledge, collecting experience from that place. And we have to find those traps. You know, we have to find those places to set traps.
Yeah, boy, definitely. The honey holes, I think, are great for, when you're having a tough time getting out, you kind of know what's there, and it kind of pulls you. You know, I'm usually excited to go out to the beach and see all the clear tracks, see who's been moving around. So that's definitely, honey holes are good for pulling you out there.
Totally. Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of times that's a pattern I've seen over the years too, is just that, where someone, say, comes to an evaluation and they haven't done much tracking at all, and they're just like, oh my God, this is amazing. They fall in love with it because it's so fun. And then they have all this inspiration, but they have no place to really put it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, all of a sudden, and what happens to us all is we get pumped up about something, and then we wake up one day and 6 months have passed, and we haven't done anything. And so a lot of times that can come down to people just not knowing where to go. And I can listen to these conversations with folks. Like, I'll see people that meet at an eval and or meet on a trailing workshop or whatever it is, and they're like all pumped up and being like, all right, let's get a little group together to go do stuff. And I can hear in the conversation some of the like, well, where do we go? And to some degree, there are they can be like, well, we can come to the spots that we were this weekend or whatever, but you can see that limitation right there. And so really putting in the effort to find good places is huge for people's growth. And it can be one of the more difficult things and one of the real limiting obstacles that people run into. So finding places is key.
Yeah. And when you were here in Oregon doing the this eval this last time, I had never gone to the end of the other side of the island and tracked where we went on those mud flats. And you know, that was just a turn away from the place I always pass. So,
right. You know, yeah, totally.
I need to be searching some more.
For sure. And I think that is one of the side benefits of evaluations too, is that it happens pretty commonly where we will go into an area and of course we're running around like headless chickens trying to find places, and then we've got people that have been tracking there for years and they're like, holy shit, I never saw this underpass before.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a fun thing that it's an act of desperation on our part, which can be revealing for others. So
do you ever look at maps at home and try to guess where you think the animals are going to be, and then go out and see, compare what you find in the field to the map you were thinking about at home, looking for specific animals?
For sure. And, you know, hunters, that's kind of one of the areas where really good elk hunters or deer hunters excel, where they're able to pull up topo maps and Google Earth and just start being like, all right, look at these finger ridges, look at those saddles, this is where we're going to find beds, look at that, look at those north facing slopes in the summertime, and being like, dang, look at all that dark fir in there, a bunch of dark timber, that's where the elk are going to be. And and so that's really good to do. I don't necessarily do that for I mean, it's always fun to do with things like mountain lions. And from the mountain lion work we've done, that's very useful. And part of the actual lion research was really because we would see all the GPS points from the cat's collar overlaid in Google Earth. So it was a lot of map time, which was really cool because it does give you a sense, because you're seeing where the cats are moving, of course, and how they like to move. But then you're also seeing where they're killing everything, and it gives you, by default, a real image of where the elk and the deer are. And but it is really fun with an animal like a mountain lion that's covering a lot of ground and moving a lot like we do, in the sense where, you know, if you're on the ground or looking down in Google Earth and you see, if you're down like in a valley floor and there's a big mesa, and then you're like, how do you get up there? And you look over and there's this long, gentle finger ridge that comes down, sloping down. You're like, well, that's where I would go to get up top. And then you say to yourself, that's where the lion scrapes are, because the lion's thinking the same thing. And so that's really fun to do. But then, of course, the smaller the animal, it can become trickier to do that. But it is fun to look at maps. And just when I'm looking at maps, I just love looking at little places where you can see all of a sudden where – like in the desert, say, where there's just this kind of dark little hole, and you know it's going to hold moisture better just because of the way all the little hills and the canyons came together, and you can see some greenery, and it's like, oh, let's go check that out, because that's got to be a sweet little spot.
Yeah, I suppose the evaluators probably get really good at this, because you're going to new locations all the time, and you have to be able to find the spot for the eval. I mean, I guess the people there give you a list of locations they know, but ultimately you go out and assess which ones and where. And
yeah, for sure. I first started doing that watching Mark Elbrock, because he was just a hound. He'd apply his Elbrock nature, of course, to everything that he does. And so when we'd drop into an area to do an eval, we'd buy a little, like a local map. It wasn't a topo map. It really had nothing to do with the woods, but we would just look at it and he'd just be like, all right, look at all these underpasses. Ooh, look at that one. That's a big creek. Oh my God, look at that. And then we started getting all dreamy about underpasses, which is hilarious. Yeah. But that's where I really started picking that up, as Mark would just look down, just get super excited about digging up the very best human infrastructure over waterways and drainages, and then we would just hound them. You know, when I'm doing evals in new places, I'll hit like 25 underpasses.
Yeah.
Drive all over the place, and you know, 23 of them are terrible, and then two of them are like, yeah, sweet. And so it is a good approach to think about for all of us, no matter what we're doing, just to increase those odds of finding life.
Yeah. So I'd kind of like to talk about a little bit of practices and routines. Like, what are some good routines we should have that, and practices that could help us during those low times, you know, things that we can ingrain into ourselves when we're inspired, cool, that can help us carry us through.
Cool. Yeah. So, for one, I think it's just really important to recognize that we're not always gonna be stoked all the time. You know, sometimes, especially because in my job, going around and working with all these folks that are very dedicated to wildlife tracking, I hear it a lot. Like, a lot of times there will be folks where, and they just want to talk about wildlife tracking all the time, and it just has this sense that it's always amazing and always thrilling. And it's just important for us to know that we're going to forget that we care.
Yeah,
and just relax into that. I mean, I think this obviously isn't a real routine for actually getting out in the field, but I think it's important to know that everybody that is good at this stuff has just not cared about it all the time. You know, like it's just going to come in waves, and that's okay. And it's important for us to know that we don't have to question that we're in love with what we're doing when we're not feeling motivated, because I think that can come up where we're like, oh my God, do I not care about wildlife tracking anymore? Am I really not cut out for this? Is this not what I should be doing? And all of that mental chatter can really bog us down. And I would have loved to hear somebody be like, hey, look, man, sometimes this is just going to suck.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, okay, it's okay. And just be like, all right. And so just as a routine, just as having something to hold on to, that's a really good thing. Be like, okay, cool. Sometimes I'm going to be stoked, sometimes I'm not, and that's okay. And just keep at it, and know that this is a lifelong practice, and we'll still be learning stuff about elk rubs on trees when we're in our 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's good. And then when we get into the actual nitty gritty of it, for me, it's pretty simple. You just have to make yourself go out. And I remember talking to Mark Elbrock way back in the day, you know, this is probably 2003 or 2004, and starting to drill him with questions about how he did things. And I remember he told me once, he's just like, man, sometimes you just got to climb that mountain. And we just have to remember that sometimes, you know, we have to pull ourselves out of bed by the scruff of the neck and throw ourselves out into the wet woods and be like, ugh. And then allow the setting to carry us. And so we have to get out. That's all it comes down to. And when we are in a slump, there's a couple different approaches. You know, you can just, you could try to get out even more than you were before and just force yourself into it. Or at least you just hold course and you're like, okay, not really feeling it, but I'm going to go out. And it might not be all that fun. You might go kick around on the beach and just be like, eh, ho-hum. But there might be that thing that gets you really excited. And so we just have to allow ourselves the opportunity and be okay with how we're feeling at the time, whether it's exhilarated or just kind of depressed about the whole situation.
Yeah.
And as far as actual practices on the ground, I mean, I personally, things don't really jump to mind, and I'll probably regret not having thought about this more when we hang up and be like, oh, I should have said this.
Yeah,
and this.
That always happens. yeah,
sure.
With me.
But I think it's just about giving ourselves the opportunity to get out there, see what the world is spontaneously offering, and working it. And then when we get home, one of the things that got me really going, it's funny too, because I never take pictures of anything anymore, kind of regretfully, but I carried a digital camera for a long time in the early days. I got a camera in like 2003, and I just started taking photos of everything, just because everything was so beautiful to look at, for one. But then it was so cool to be able to come home and just hold that nice set of deer tracks and pull it up again. And even if just in looking at my photos, I was out in the field again. And it was, you know, there's all that stuff about memory and learning things. And if you revisit stuff, your memory increases exponentially. And so that can be really useful. It's just to be looking through your photos and checking stuff out. And, you know, in the beginning, when you're not sure what things are, that's so good to be able to look at photos and be like, oh, okay. And comparing it at home in the warmth of your little house and flipping through the field guides doing stuff. And so that's really useful. Taking pictures can be awesome just in a very casual sense. And, you know, to dig deeper into that for people that are interested in drawing, of course, is great. But you know what? Some people get really into this whole idea of doing journals and things. And some of my peers, like Neil White comes to mind. Neil White is one of the finest wildlife trackers I've ever met on planet Earth. And
what's his name?
Hated drawing. Neil White.
Okay.
He's a buddy of mine from we met in Washington at Wilderness Awareness School a long, long time ago, and we've just stayed fast friends and done a lot of work together over the years. But, he comes to mind because that guy is just sharp as a nail, and he hated drawing. He hated, you know, he doesn't want to sit down and do journals. Like, he's just not into it. And a lot of people are like that. And that's another thing for practice. Sometimes we have to force ourselves into stuff. But I say, if you got to force yourself into something, force yourself into getting out and not right. into doing things you just don't like. Like, I've just seen people get turned off because they have to do a certain amount of journals.
Yeah.
And for me, I've just never cared about that because I have seen human beings just that are just amazing in the field and just never wanted to pick up a notepad and like draw stuff and measure stuff. They're just like, nope. And then I have other friends that are fantastic that are like, I remember laughing with Nate Harvey once because this was a long time ago and we were talking about stuff and Nate was a obsessive measurer. He just loves that, I guess. He might yell at me after this, but
maybe he's a machinist at heart too or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, ooh, ooh. And like, he can like recite differences of animals in the field. Like, well, the range for long-tailed weasels is this to that. And the overlap is right in here with mink or whatever. And I remember we were laughing about robins and I was like, yeah, I couldn't tell you. I can like hold my hand up and tell you how big a robin track is, but I couldn't tell you the measurements. He's like, well, I can't remember how it came down to it, but he's like, basically it just came down to, I know robin tracks, their size, cause they're robin sized, you know? And so the point of that whole spiel is that some people love to journal, other people don't. And you know, when you're going to schools for this stuff now, you might have to just do your journal. We just have to suck it up and do it because life
Yeah.
Is like that sometimes. But in terms of our own carrying ourselves, we don't want to do things that we don't like doing because it can turn us off. And so, but there's a difference between that and then just not having the gut to fight through some of our own laziness. And so we got to get out and, we've got to continue to learn however that comes. And so during slumpy times too, the other thing that can be really nice is to pick up like the animal behavior book or to get on Google Scholar and just look up what folks have read about black bears or researched about black bears. And
Wait, what did you say? Just Google what?
Google Scholar. So that's
Scholar.
Good one.
Okay.
Yeah. I usually talk about that at the end of evals. It's super cool because you can get on there, and even if you can't get access to the full article, you can read all these abstracts. And, you know, if you look up, if you're going home and to Wyoming, say, you can be like, well, let's get on Google Scholar and type in Wyoming black bear. And you will just get all of these papers that have been done on all this research about black bears in the state of Wyoming or neighboring states. And the stuff that you can learn is so cool. And it will tell you, you know, how much water black.
Are you there?
Oops, I'm sorry. I muted you.
Okay.
You know, and so the more we can learn about that, and that can be done really easily too. You can learn something in 10 minutes on Google Scholar that makes you be like, that's interesting. And it makes you think about black bears different, and that makes you look for black bear sign differently when you go into the woods. So reading up on animals is really a good thing to do too for that slump. If you don't want to get out that day because it's raining, but you want to do something, take 20 minutes and just read about an animal. And that will get us fired up too. We're like, whoa, that's cool.
And one of the things here in Portland, there's a pretty good community of trackers. So I think that making friends with people that live nearby, you know, could also be helpful. That are interested in tracking.
That's a great point. I didn't think of that because I don't have any friends. Just kidding. No, that's such a good point. And I mean, that's just like exercise, I guess, too, where on your training day, say somebody you might not want to go, but you know your buddy is going.
Yeah.
So, and he or she might be like, hey, come on. So that's really good to do, too, is set up times with your buddies and get out and sniff around together. And the other thing, too, things that we can do, obviously, easily is to take classes, take evals, just do anything that's going to inject us with a new level of looking and learn some things, maybe learn some new ways of looking. We're always trying to build that arsenal of questions to ask. The more questions we can ask, it's you know, we talked about that in the fluency one, but it just makes such a difference when you look down at an elk track. Depending on what questions you can ask, that elk track experience can be wildly different between individuals. And so the more we know to ask around all those, you know, the different ways of looking at tracking, from ID to weathering to, you know, individuals versus species to behavior to ecological context, it just keeps stacking and stacking and stacking. And,
Having those questions, definitely, right? Mm-hmm. Right. It could get pretty boring if you just walked around and said elk, deer, coyote,
sure.
You know. But being able to say, oh, the coyote is, you know, galloping or whatever. Why would he
exactly.
would he do that right here or something? You know, definitely pulls you in more.
Exactly. Yeah. So injecting ourselves with continued education, if you will, from both the wildlife themselves, which are of course the best, but then learning from other folks, whether that's your friends or taking evals or whatever. And then the other thing that's really important and often overlooked is to travel, to go learn things. Even if you can just hop in the car and drive, you know, Washington State is great for that for people that live up there because they can work on the west side, just soaking it up. and then they can just hop over the Cascades. You know, Oregon, of course, will be the same, get out into the desert. And you spend a few days in the desert. You can even go out for an overnight, you know, get out there in the afternoon, wake up in the morning and just like soak up kangaroo rat sign and jackrabbits and, yeah. And mule deer over there and just be like, dang. And it does something for us. And it's so cool to, it's a beautiful thing to watch that the language translate and just, even if you're not sure what you're looking at, it's so cool to see how much we can see. And so traveling is just really important, to help shake things up and boost learning on either end of that trip back at home and out there. And, that can do a lot for us to break a routine and shake redundancy.
On your topic of, you know, seeing things, going to different areas and being able to try to interpret different things. I remember the first time I went down to the Oregon Dunes and saw gray fox tracks, and it was in a straddle trot, which I had never really seen a straddle trot before. And I had all these theories that, oh, it must have been pregnant and all this stuff. And then, you know, I read in the book that was like, oh, that's kind of a common thing to move in.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's definitely fun to go to new areas. You'll learn some cool stuff.
It really is. Yeah, it's good to do.
So well, thanks a lot for talking on the show again with us. Is there feel like there's anything else that we left unturned here? Probably will when we hang up.
I think that's probably good for now. We'll probably beat it to death as much as we could. It's such a cool topic. I'm sure we could go and go and go, but for our listeners, it's probably better to wrap it. But yeah, we just have to get out there and keep instilling ourselves with little bits over time, and it all adds up.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. It's really good to hear from you again, and we'll probably talk to you again soon in the future.
Sounds great. Thank you, Garth. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.